Hi, family. My name's Tamara, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tamara. We love you, Tamara. Lots and lots and lots.
Lots.
Thank you. Thank you to the IAPA 2 host committee for asking me to come speak. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to participate at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm really grateful. I'm really nervous, and I called my sponsor. That's not why I said that. I said that because I called my sponsor right before I got here, and right before I came in to speak, and I was like, I'm so nervous. And she's like, it's because you love AA and you want the world to love AA, right? And that's why I'm here, is to tell you guys how much I love Alcoholics Anonymous and how it's changed my life. My sobriety date is June 2nd, 2010. I am sponsored by Tina H. from Waukesha, Wisconsin. And I have a home group. It's currently Between the Covers in Chicago, Illinois. It's Tuesday night big book study. Everyone's welcome. We'd love to have you. And I say that I'm actively sponsored because I've been inactively sponsored in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first 14 months that I was here, I was doing a lot of service. I was hanging out with a lot of people. I actually was sponsoring people. I was going to a lot of YPAs. I was doing some fun things, but I didn't work the steps and I didn't find God, and I almost killed myself 14 months in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, and I say that because, we read the traditions before, and, you know, the fifth tradition says that my primary purpose is to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic. It does not say to carry the message to the newcomer, and I need to remember that, because thank God people carried the message to me when I was suffering in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and dying sitting in the seats that you guys are in. So if you're struggling tonight and you're suffering tonight, please just hold on, because it can get better if you get into the book and a sponsor takes you through the 36 principles of AA. That was my experience. And it's also going to be important for me to talk about the 36 principles. A lot of people hear a lot about the 12 steps. A lot of people hear some about the traditions, and a lot of people hear pretty much nothing about the concepts, at least is my experience. And that was my experience when I first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But my experience and the women in my life who have what I want have shown me that the steps take care of my mind, the traditions take care of my body, and the concepts take care of my spirit. And with them three, I'm whole. Without the three of them, I can't be whole. And I'm really grateful to know that, because by practicing all 36 principles, I can be a full person. So that's really important to me. Because I was, before I came in the rooms, and for a very long time in the rooms, like, I was either better than or worse than. I never felt like I was better than, but I acted better than or worse than, right? Like, a lot of people will say I compete, a lot of people will say whatever it is, but, like, I was never an equal member on the playing field, ever. And even if I felt like I was, I didn't treat you like I was, or like you were. I always was talking behind your back. I always was stirring the pot. I was trying to, my favorite thing to do was to have to put people against each other, right? I tell this person that this person talked about them, and I tell this person talked about them, and then I walk away and just let it rumble, right? And then I'd come back the next day and be like, what's going on? How is everyone? And that's how I had relationships. Because my alcoholism, my alcoholism isn't just a problem with drinking. Because if drinking was my problem, I would have stopped drinking and my problems would have gone away. But the reality is I have a problem with living. When I stopped drinking, I couldn't face the world. I couldn't get up in front of people. I couldn't have conversations with anyone. My family that I was close with, I couldn't have conversations with, right? Because my problem is this relationship disorder and this perception disorder that I have. And I thought that that's how you had relationships, right? Like, you pin people on each other. And my favorite way to have relationships is, like, I wanted you to know who I was. So I would tell you all these outlandish lies, right, that everyone knew were lies. But you would walk away and you'd be like, that woman, that girl is such a liar. Or you would talk to someone else about me. I'm still on your mind. I'm still the center of attention. I'm not even there anymore and you're talking about me and thinking about me, right? And that's how I, like, lived, you know? And I threw people under the bus all the time. My brother and I were pretty estranged for about 10 or 15 years before I came into the Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you had asked me to tell you about my brother, I would have told you that he was a jerk, he was an a-hole, he was all of these things. The truth is that he was protecting his heart because I was breaking his heart. Because I was a liar and I was a thief and I stole his peace of mind like I steal my whole family's peace of mind. And I mean, I remember sitting at a table with people, I don't even know where we were, and my family was there, and this person was like, oh my gosh, my family's going to Florida tomorrow for like 2 weeks. And I'm like, that's great. My family has a house in Hawaii. My family has never been to Hawaii. My family has never talked about going to Hawaii, right? But like, I had to be better than everything you said. And then when my brother walks by, I'm like, hey Dave, aren't we going to Hawaii next week for like 3 months, right? I throw him right under that bus and I make everyone else cover for me, right? Because I'm the master manipulator. And I'll kind of get to step three as we're talking, because step three is my step of still master manipulating in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm not connected to God, because I can do it. I'm good at it if I'm not connected. I was good at it then. I'm good at it now. But thank God for the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother is one of my favorite people. And I say that as he's one of my favorite people. That doesn't mean that we get along all the time. It doesn't mean that we agree with everything. But part of my living amend, I was grateful that I have a sponsor who makes me show up to life and makes me show up to what I've done. And part of my living amend is I call my brother's cell phone at least once a week. And I call my brother's house at least once a week. And I show up for his family whether I want to or not, whether that's where I want to be or not. But God put me on this earth to have some roles, and one of those roles was to be a sister. And I need to show up as a sister. Whether he treats me like a sister is not my business. God put me here to be a sister. And so I talk about that because my relationships have changed, right? I got this thing that I call God. It's this higher power. I don't care what you call it. Just find it, please. Because I was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't find it. I fought it. I didn't want to do it. I did what they call, if you're fighting God, read chapter 2 in the 12 and 12. Get into that debating society, right? That's what it talks about in chapter 2 of the 12 and 12, this debating society, that I know what's best for me always. And that there's nothing that knows better, and that's where I was living in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I knew what was best for me, and nobody and nothing could tell me differently. And as I said, that brought me to a full suicide plan in the rooms of AA, because I wasn't willing to change. And thank God for two women who were in my home group, who I saw on a Thursday night. Our home group was Sunday night. I saw on a Thursday night, and they're like, dude, you look like poop. What's going on? And I said, I really like think I'm going to kill myself. Like, I have this suicide plan. And they said, give us like 3 days, come to our home group on Sunday, meet our sponsor and see what happens. Cause they had the same sponsor. And I went to this home group. It had been my home group for a year and a half. I never saw this woman. She sat in the exact same seat, the first seat, the second seat in on the first row on the left-hand side every single day for a year and a half. But I only see what I want to see. And I only hear what I want to hear. And I had never heard this woman in the room. She shares every single week. And I never heard her because she spoke the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she spoke this truth about me that was the truth about her. And I walked up to this woman one day and I said, I'm dying and I need help. And she said, are you willing to go to any length? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, no. Are you willing to do everything in that big book that it tells you to do? Answer every question, do every must, do every need to. And I said, I have to or I'm going to die. And she said, great, buckle your seatbelt and enjoy the ride. And that has been my ride, right? That has been my ride. That was when I was 14 months sober. About when I was 18 months sober, for the first time in my life, I got on my knees. I was raised in a religion where we didn't get on our knees. And I say that, and I used to be like, nope, my religion says I don't get on my knees, but you can ask me anything else about my religion, and I don't know. Right? Like, I just was going to argue about everything and anything. And as I said, especially about religion and God. And, you know, I used to tell people, I was so arrogant and so ignorant when I came in these rooms. I was such a brat that I would tell people that religion was put on this earth to produce chaos, but I didn't know anything about any religions, and I just started trouble. It's a conversation piece. I'm going to tell these religious people that their religion was put on this earth to start chaos, and I'm just going to sit here, and I'm going to have nothing to back it up, and I'm just going to argue, because that's what I'm good at. I'm good at arguing, and I'm good at getting you mad. I got on my knees. I started to work the steps, and I got to the third step, and I got on my knees with my sponsor, and I was like, this is weird, getting on my knees in the bathroom of Starbucks. Excuse me, in the city of Chicago. Starbucks, where you have to pay to go into the bathroom because there's so many homeless people who live around there that the bathrooms are locked. And so we got on our knees, and it was actually funny walking out when all these people are like looking at these two grown women like walking out of a bathroom together. We're like, we're just praying, and they're like, okay. But that's cool. But it was true, right? It was true. And so I got on my knees, and I got home that night. And when I got home that night, I got on my knees for the first time ever by myself. And I thanked God for putting the people in my life. And like that moment was the first moment that I actually breathed in 34 years of life. Right? I had been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for 18 months. And that was the first time that I actually breathed. And you know, that's because God gives me spirit. God gives me breath. And God allows me to just be. And that was the first time that I was able to feel that, was that connection. And you know, I definitely don't do it perfectly. I definitely don't do it like consistently and all of that. But when I do it, and when I reach out to this thing that's bigger than me that I can't define, and thankfully I can't define it, I'm okay. I don't have the glitter. I don't have the gold. I don't have the house with the white picket fence, the man who's got $1 million, the 50 children, all of those things that I thought that I had to have when I was younger. When I was younger, like, I would tell you what my wedding was going to look like. I would tell you what my wedding dress was going to look like. Like, I don't have those things, but you know what? I have peace of mind. My head is quiet, and my heart is big today. And when my heart is big, my head is quiet. And when my head is big, my heart is small. I mean, yeah, when my head is loud, my heart is small. And I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful today that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have softened my heart. And they've allowed my heart to get bigger. And, you know, as Margaret had said, like, it's actually a funny story how I got into WIPA. So I was in treatment for about 11 weeks. I went to a sober living house in Chicago. I got there on a Friday night. I was really excited. I was told that, like, one of the biggest and best meetings in the city was on Saturday night. I walked into there on Saturday night. There was not one single person in that room. And I was pissed. And that, come to find out, circle back, they were not in that room because they were all in New York City at IKIPA. But I didn't know that, right? And so I walk in there and I'm like, oh, these people are liars. Oh, these people are tricking me. Like, I shouldn't have come here. I should have gone home back to the Washington, D.C. area. Like I can't trust anything or anyone. And I stuck around for a little while. And the next week I came in on that Saturday night and this meeting was huge, right? And there was like 200 people in this room on Saturday night, 8:30, people who had like 2 days sober, people who had 15 years sober, like celebrating life on a Saturday night, and just loving life and fellowshipping afterwards. And I got nominated that night to chair that meeting for 6 months. And yeah, it was funny. And I was like, okay, whatever. Like, I didn't even know what that meant, right? Like, because this is my first time I've ever been in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can tell you that I've been promised through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and through my sponsor that if I do what's in the book, it's going to be my last time having to walk through the doors, too, that I'm able to stay. I'm allowed to stay, and I'm going to stay if I do the work as I'm told to do out of the book, not out of my head and what I think I need to do. And I'm grateful for that. And, you know, that was a Friday night. That Saturday morning, I was at a meeting, and one of the girls from Friday night had come up to me and was like, hey, come with me tonight to this business meeting. And I'm like, what is a business meeting? She said, come with me. We're going to go to the Chicago Bid for IKIPA meeting. And I was like, okay. Like, I don't even know what that means. I'm like, sure, whatever. She's like, you're going to meet all these people. I was thrown into fellowship chair that night. As I had said, that was September of 2010. I got sober in June of 2010. I had been out of treatment for less than 2 weeks, and I became fellowship chair of the Chicago Bid of IKIPA that went into San Francisco in 2011. And because of some unfortunate circumstances from others on that committee, I ended up a bench chair. And later, I'm program chair, and I'm chair. But the reality is that thank God for committee service working young people in Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I was dying without a God in the rooms, you guys kept me up. You guys kept me afloat. And you guys kept me here long enough to work the steps and change my life. That would not keep, I mean, I have to be honest. The fellowship would not keep me here where I am today. I'd be dishonest to tell you that service keeps me sober. I'd be dishonest to tell you that fellowship keeps me sober. That would be my lie, right? The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 traditions and 12 concepts keep me sober. But service and the fellowship keep me connected to God and connected to my sponsor, connected to AA, so that I can do those other things. Because when I'm not being of service, I forget that I'm an alcoholic. And when I'm not being of service, I forget that I need to work the steps and that I need to be working with other men and women to take them through these steps. And so I'm really grateful. I'm really grateful to Young People's and Alcoholics Anonymous. Whatever it looks like to you, it can be very scary walking into your first meeting, Young People's meeting, first conference. Anyone who's here for the first time, welcome.
Yeah.
Hope you come back again. Shameless plug, the closest one that's coming up is in Chicago, August August 7th. August 17th to 20th, Icky Pop will tell you all about it afterwards. It's going to be a little bit bigger, so the meeting might be a little scarier the first time you go in, but I'm hoping to see everyone there. And I say that as outreach chair, but I really say that as an alcoholic who loves AA and who loves Young People Service and who loves Young People Conferences. And I do everything in my power, no matter what it is, to get anyone wherever they need to be, if it has to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm really grateful that that I was dying enough, this sounds crazy, but I'm grateful that I was dying enough in the rooms of AA that I was willing to do the work, right? Like, I wasn't going to get on my knees, as I said, I was like debating, and one of the old timers, God love him, he died with 54 years sober, he got sober in the Mexican jail and then ended up back in Chicago. Like, his story was like the best thing in the world, and he used to always say, with 54 years, that what I have today is that I wake up and I brush my teeth and I shower, and that's what 54 years of sobriety looks like for me, because I didn't do that for a very long time. And and I'm grateful that I can do that. And that man said to me one night, he said, you are willing to give up everything, you're willing to do everything different, but your theory of God, why don't you just try it, why don't you just stop fighting, get out of your way, shut down your ego, and do something different today and see what happens. And if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. Okay, you're not going to hurt my feelings. That's what he said to me. He's like, okay, tell me I'm wrong. He's like, and if I'm right, please carry that on to everyone else so they can see what I've given you. And that's why I'm here, right? Like, I'm here to show you that when I'm not in charge, the world is amazing, right? That doesn't mean that there's not chaos. That doesn't mean that there's not heartache. That doesn't mean that bad things don't happen. But that means that I'm okay when things crumble around me. I know that I'm where I'm supposed to be no matter what, when I'm doing the work and connecting to God. And and thank God. Thank God for those old timers. Thank God for those old timers who also remind me that I had 5 years sober, and I was telling them about this job that I lost. And one of them said to me, how many 4 steps have you done? And I said, 4. And he's like, so you need to take responsibility for your life. And I was like, yeah. He's like, you didn't lose your job. It's sitting right there. You got fired. And I was like, oh, right? He's like, saying you lost your job is not taking responsibility for your actions. You got fired. And I'm like, oh, right? And, like, I'm so grateful that, like, 8 years ago, if you said that to me, I would have been like, no, my boss, blah, 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 blah. And, like, I would have argued with you about everything. But, like, I'm like, oh, wow. Maybe I need to go and inventory that. Maybe I need to do a little more work on that. Maybe I'm a little too pompous and too ego-driven to see that. What do I need to do? And call my sponsor and say, hey, how do I get through this? This is a 6 and 7 step problem. And how do I work through that? How do I do an inventory on 6 and 7 that I think that I'm still running on my character defects and that's okay? And it's okay for me to continue to harm others. And, you know, my favorite is in 8 and 9 where it tells me that by the time I get to 8 and 9, I've stopped causing harm. I've stopped harming other people. Now, I talk about 8 and 9. Let's preface that I've worked 1 through 7 before I get to 8 and 9, please. And I've worked 4 and 5 thoroughly out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and taken 5 with the sponsor and told her everything, because I'm guaranteed a drink in here if I keep anything. If I keep one thing from my sponsor, I'm guaranteed a drink. It's a promise. There are a lot of positive promises in here, and there are a lot of death threats in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my experience has been that I've seen all of them, the promises and the death threats. And because to me, to go back out is a death threat. That was worse. Living in alcoholism is worse for me than dying. I can't imagine ever doing that again. And so, you know, I by the time I get to 8 and 9, after having thoroughly done 4 and 5, I'm out of the business of harming others, right? Like, I'm out of that business. And I need to remember that we were driving up here. My friend Molly came with me, and we were driving up here, and I have some health issues. And I was talking to the doctor, and I was talking to the pharmacist, and it was like I was getting this runaround, and I was getting this runaround, and, like, I was just praying in my head. And I said to her when I got off the phone, I was like, I need to call John back on Monday and apologize. That was absolutely inappropriate for me how I talked to him. It's not his fault that the system, like, this is his job. And he's doing a job to feed his family. And he's doing a job to make money. And it's not my fault. And it's not, I mean, it's not his fault. And I have no right to be angry at him. And I didn't yell at him. I was just snarky. I just played that old manipulation game and all that stuff. And because I'm not perfect. And I don't always, and I'm not always connected. And I was able to pause in the car. And I was able to take a breath and to pray and to realize that. And on Monday, I'm going to write a letter, and I'm going to send it to the doctor's office for John to let him know that it's unacceptable for me to treat people like that today. And that's amazing, because I used to bully people left and right. I used to steal people's peace of mind all the time, and I didn't find anything wrong with it. We were talking about traditions and relationships last night with my sponsor and some of my sister sponsees, and one of the things that came up for me was I remember I used to steal people's peace of mind all the time in my relationships. Like, I would call. I lived in Chicago. I'd been there for 2 days. 2 days. And my parents were out east, and I couldn't find my wallet because I dropped it because I've never, whatever. I dropped it in the streets in Chicago. And it's Sunday night. My mom's out east in the D.C. area, and I call my mom. I'm 33 years old at the time. And I call my mom, and I say, I don't have any money. What am I going to do? I don't have a wallet. What am I going to do? I'm living in a sober living house. I have food. I have my license so I can go to the bank tomorrow morning and get money. There is nothing wrong with my life. But I'm going to call my mother, who's halfway across the country, so she's going to worry about me again and not sleep. And I have been sober for 3 months. How arrogant and ignorant am I? Right? And I do that a lot. I steal people's peace of mind all the time. I give you business that's not yours. And I, as my sponsor tells me, I emotionally vomit on people. Right? I give you information that's not yours, and then I let you worry about it all the time and worry about me all the time because I need to be the center of attention. And when I'm right with God, I don't need to act that way. And that brings me back. I think I had started in the beginning a little bit about step three, and that lets me circle back to step three. I have to talk a lot about step three. I have, and again, I'm talking about it after having worked the steps many a times. But I have to talk a lot about step three because if I'm not, my experience is that if I'm not connected to step three, I'm not doing 4 through 12. Because if I'm not connected to God, then I'm being resentful. I'm not telling someone about it. I'm acting on my character defects and my shortcomings. I'm causing harm that needs to make amend. I'm not stopping to do a spot check. I'm not, surely not praying and meditating, and I'm not helping other people. If I'm not connected to God, that's what happens to me. So I have to go back to three, first thing, everything I do. You know, I was talking to my sponsor before I got up here, and she said, do that third step prayer before you get up on stage, right? I need to get out of the way. I need to get out of the way and free myself from me and think that I am the solution or I am the problem, because I'm neither. I'm just a carrier of God's message. That's all I am. And I'm grateful to know that. And I'm an equal player on God's playing field. Right? It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter your race, your sexual preference, your age. I don't care. We are equal members on God's playing field. And if I'm judging someone, if I'm commenting about someone, if I, because I do it much more in my head than I do it verbally, if I'm doing it in my nightly inventory, whatever, like those things, that's just selfishness, right? That's just selfishness and superiority. And me judging someone else is me just being selfish and me saying that I'm better than them. That's really arrogant of me because I am an equal member. And I'm grateful to know that. It really allows me to breathe. Sorry, tangent. I want to get back to three. So, you know, the third step tells me that that I turned my will and my life over to care of God as we understood him. AKA in my world, I turn my thoughts and my actions over to the care of God as I understand him. And going back to two real quick, actually, because I have to do this before I go here. I am so grateful that I've worked the steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with someone who's worked the steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, who also worked them with someone who worked them out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I know the truth of what the book says and the experience of the first 100 men and women who wrote this story. And because I hear all the time in the rooms when people are like, yeah, like I found out I'm selfish in four. I'm like, great, read the third step in the big book, because the third step in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is where it tells us it's selfish. It tells me about this delusion that it talks about in the third step that I love to talk about, because I talked about it on my way up here, because I fall into it all the time when I'm not connected to God, right? This delusion that I know what's best for you and that I know what's best for me, that if you do it my way, we're going to all be okay. Everyone, right? And I mean, that delusion's with my sponsees, with my boss, who's been in the profession much longer than I am and doing a bigger job than me, but with my parents, right? Like this, with my siblings who are parents, with how they raise their children, and I'm not a parent, but like this delusion is that if you do it my way, we're going to all be okay. And another delusion in the third step, which is the one that hits me home the most and makes me breathe the hardest and get the most relief when I don't have to act, that is that if this, then that. If I get the boyfriend, I'm going to be okay. If I get this new job, I'm going to be okay. $100, like I just need to win this lottery ticket and I'm going to be okay. That new house, that new running this conference, whatever it is, those things are going to make me okay. And the truth is, for me and my experience, none of those things make me okay. Those things make me sicker in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for me, it's also true that when I'm in three, that I realize that, you know, it talks about and how it works, that alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Or alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. So is alcoholism, by the way. You know, it tells me in there that... which is the precursor to the third step, and it tells me that it's baffling and it's cunning, and for me it's remarkable. It's remarkable. I can go to work two exact same days, do the exact same thing two exact same days, come home, meet with the same sponsee, go to the same meeting, call my sponsor at the same time, talk to my sponsees in order at the same time, and one day everyone's a problem, and the next day they're not. And the only difference is that I connected to God one morning, and the other day I didn't. And what that tells me over and over and over again is that they're never the problem. A lack of God is the problem. God is my answer. That means that a lack of God is always my problem. Always. But my alcoholism is so baffling that it shows up as the boyfriend being the problem, or the money being the problem, or the sex or the lack of sex, or the job or the lack of job, or my parents or my roommate or whatever it is, the construction on the road on the way to Iowa, right? Like, that's all that actually was very relaxing. It's much better than Chicago traffic, truth. But like all those things are the problem, but the truth is that with God, none of those things are the problem. So a lack of God is always my problem. It just looks different. And I'm so grateful to know that today, because that then tells me that God is always my solution no matter what. And I do not want that to be my solution most of the time. Like that's not like my go-to. I want to be able to fix it, right? Like I want to fix, manage, and control everything and everyone, primarily everyone. But like the truth is that like when I'm right with God, I'm okay. I'm okay. And I'm going to be taken care of. And I'm really, really grateful for that. And then another part in this third step is this word that it talks about on page, I think it's 61. It tells us that we have this self-propulsion, right? And the first time I read that, I was like, oh, yeah, right, self-propulsion, blah, blah, blah. Run through the steps, run through the book, because a book doesn't really matter and doesn't tell me anything. And then I, you know, I'm dying in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm told to, like, take the actions out of the book and to do the work as it says. And this self-propulsion... I'm a master manipulator. I can self-propel my way into anything and anyone. I can get that interview. I can get that boyfriend. I can get that money. I can figure out how to get that new apartment. But without God, without God's guidance, and without connecting to God, I don't keep any of it. Isn't that a miracle and crazy, right? Because I can propel my way into anything. They call it self-propulsion in the big book because they're being nice. It's manipulation. True story. And I can still do that, right? And so that's why I talk often about three, because I need to be deep in three to be able to not have to participate in some of the actions that I like to do outside of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that got me here. And I need to talk a little bit about the amends process. The amends process for me was life-changing. I'll tell you the story that I got as a result of the amends process, which happened last week, that I was telling some people about, which is like the most amazing thing in the world. But this amends process is like what you know, when Bill Wilson talks about Ebbie Thatcher and how he came to his door and he was, like, spiritually reorganized. I'm misquoting, but that's okay. But this reorganization, and that's what the amends process and the steps have done. They have reorganized me, right? Like, I am different from the inside out, right? The steps and the traditions and the concepts clean me out from the inside out. I came in these rooms thinking that I needed to be cleaned out from the outside in, and I needed to look cuter, and I needed to have more money, and I needed to have more friends, and I needed to do all that. But the truth is that none of that's going to keep me sober, nor is it going to keep me sane, nor is it going to keep me from killing myself or putting myself in a position to hurt someone else. And so I have to be clean from the inside out, and the steps allow me to do that. And a big part of that is this amends process. And I made some powerful amends. I was able to make living amends to my mother. My mother and I are like two peas in a pod. We are very similar. It is very hard for us to get along, even with some time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm working the steps many a times. And I love her dearly. But I was able to make an amend to my mom, and I was maybe 4.5 years sober. My mom calls me on a Friday night and says, lets me know that my Aunt Susan is dying. It was her sister who lived in California. My mom was on the East Coast. Susan was in California. And it was my mom's last living relative, biological relative. And she says, you know, Tam, thank you. And I said, what, Mom? And she said, thank you for allowing me to wake up tomorrow and go face my sister's death and possibly bury my sister and not have to worry about you being alive. Thank you. And that was on a Friday night. Saturday morning, my mom went out to California. Sunday morning, my dad went out to California. Monday night, my mom called me at 9 o'clock at night and said, I need you here. And I called my boss at like 9 o'clock at night, and I said, hey, here's the situation. He said, go. And I said, when do you need me back? He said, you come in every day. You do your job every day. You show up for this company, and we're going to show up for your family. So you go, and you come back when you need to come back. And I was able to fly to California on my own dime. First time I'd ever bought an airplane in my life, right? Because my dad took care of me when I came in these rooms. And that's the next amend I'll get to, right? But I was able to pay for this without anyone having to worry. And thank God for Young People's Service. I was able to get in touch with a guy in L.A. who had been in ICIPA a few years later. I was able to get in touch with him and say, hey, I'm flying into L.A. I need to get to Long Beach, which is like an hour away. I really don't want to put my parents out. Like, it's not about me. They're there to show up for my aunt. And he took a personal day from work off of his own time to pick me up and to bring me to see my family. And I got in there. I held my aunt's hand. My aunt opened her eyes. It was the first time she opened her eyes in 6 weeks. She looked at me. She smiled. She died 6 hours later. And the next morning, I was there with my mom and my dad. My parents are happily married, have been happily married for over 40 years at this time. And my mom holds my hand as hospice is coming in to pick up my aunt and said, Susan would be so happy and so proud that we were here and we were showing up for her and I wasn't having to worry about you. Thank you. Yeah. Right? That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of God. That is not the power of this brat. Because this brat would go there and make the whole weekend about myself. And I would take my cousins out with me and get them drunk and get them high while their mom is dying. And I would, like, do things to master manipulate everything, that everything's going to circle back to Tamara, like it always does. But God had a different plan for me that weekend. God had a different plan for me with my father, too. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you ask me anything about my father, I might be able to tell you his job, tell you the city he grew up in, tell you the story of how he proposed to my mom, because my mom was in the story, so I knew the story. My parents were happily married. I grew up in a two-family home. My father was home every day. But I never cared enough to even know who he was. All I knew was that he was making the money to put food on the table, and that's all that I cared about. And I was able to make amends to my father. And what that looks like today is that I talk to my dad once a week. My dad comes out to Chicago to visit me and stays with me for 3 days, 4 days at my house or at my apartment and stays on my couch. And I get to go see baseball with my father. No opinions from the podium, but I hate baseball, but I love my father. And my living amend to my father is I do what my father wants to do, not what I want to do. And I get to, it's my parents' home. I still have to call it home. I'm going to the East Coast for about 10 days, 9 days next week. And I'm going with my dad. My dad's like doing this charity, like on the boardwalk, like selling a motorcycle. It sounds miserable to me, but my dad wants to do it. And I told my dad, like, what day can we do that? And can I spend a day with just you? Right? That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I came in this room, I couldn't even tell you my dad's favorite color. I couldn't tell you my dad's birth date. I couldn't have told you anything about my father, and I get to spend a full day with just my father and to learn more about him and to love him deeply. And that's a miraculous thing. You know, something else that I want to talk about real quick is this amends process at work. And I say this because this is my truth, and, you know, it's how I work the steps. You know, I have to be rigorously honest in all that I do. And I was four and a half years sober, and I was working, and I was working a place where I had to clock in, right? And I was supposed to clock in at 8 o'clock, so I would, on days where I wasn't connected to God, I would pull up to the front door at 8 o'clock, and I'd get out of my car, and I'd clock in, and I'd get back in my car, and I'd go park my car. Well, that's dishonest. By the way, clocking at 8 o'clock means that I'm at my desk at 8 o'clock, not I'm in the car, parking the car, and coming back 15 minutes later. So I got to, after doing a thorough four-step on my job, I got to go back and I got to give them money back for the time that they paid me that I didn't work. And I got to give my boss money back for being on Facebook and being on personal emails while I was at work and being on the phone, AA service phone, while I'm at work. Mm-mm, they're paying me to do it, their work, not my work. And I got to give them money back for using the photocopy machine to make AA copies. That it's their money. It's their ink. It's not mine. I don't have the right to do that. And then I got to go to Washington, D.C. and make an amend to the old school system that I used to work for. I was a teacher. I was an Algebra 1 teacher, and I was a teacher leader. People really respected me. People would come in and, like, see what I did in my classroom, and, you know, I really modeled effective teaching. And that last year that I was there, I didn't get sober till June. I went on a leave of absence in April. I would have told you before they asked me to nicely leave. They fired me. True story. But since the beginning of that year, I never came to school drunk, but I also never came to school present. And so I didn't teach those kids from the day I walked in the beginning of that year till the day I left on April 8th. And what that looked like was I was giving kids the most fundamental math course in high school. I was giving kids grades, just giving them free grades, right? Passing them on to geometry, setting them up for absolute failure in high school. And I was given the honor of going back to the PTA of that school. It was not still the same kids, same parents, but I went back to the PTA and I got to apologize to those parents and to say, I robbed these children of their education. What can I do to make a difference? I was wrong and I was selfish. And they said, you know, get back in the classroom and don't do it again. That's what we want you to do. Get back in the classroom and give those kids the education that they deserve and that you stole from them. Those kids, as in all kids. And I said, okay. And then I went and I went to the school system and I gave them a check for the money that they paid me that I didn't teach those kids. I was at work, but I wasn't teaching those kids, and I paid them back that salary. It was not fun. It was not easy. It was not what I wanted to do, but I did that. And last year in February of 2016, I was teaching in Chicago. I'd gotten back into teaching. It wasn't like the greatest job in the world. And this woman calls me out of the blue. Well, this woman calls me because of God. And says, hey, I heard about you, and I need someone to run the special education department at my high school. Can you come and interview? And I went and I interviewed, and I went and I was offered this job almost more than 25% more than my salary. Amazing things. I get to, like impact the life of children. Right? And the craziest thing is in this job, I'm the person who signs all the special education paperwork, and if the school gets sued, I'm the one who has to go and show up for the school, right? And don't think that that's a coincidence in anything because of what I've done. But I righted those. I righted all those wrongs with my old jobs. And God put me in a place. So it was like, you're clean with your past with work. So we're going to allow you to move on and work. What an amazing thing. Right? Because that's my dream job. And that's something that I would always love to do. And I never, ever, ever believed that I could do it. You know, I love talking about the amends. They're so helpful. And I'll talk about this one last amend, and then I want to end with something. But there was a woman in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I laugh because I'm sure that many women in the rooms here can relate. That, like, I walked in, and the first day I saw her, I didn't like her. She never spoke to me. She never looked at me. It didn't matter who she was. I was just like, I'm not going to like her, and I'm going to make her life hell, right? From the day that I saw her. Don't know why. I literally had never spoken to her, right? And then we were on the same young people's service committee, and she would raise her hand to make a make a suggestion, and I would raise my hand and tell her that she was wrong. And then we were at the same home group. Mm-hmm. We were at the same home group, and she would like say something, and I would like raise my hand and be like, "Well, page 57 of the big book says that you're wrong," and blah blah. And like, I manipulated. I abused this woman in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was able to make amends to her, and I was able to tell her that I was wrong, and that I'm selfish, and that I point fingers at other people so that I don't have to look at me, and that I blame not having friendships on other people so that I don't have to show up, right? But it's my stuff and my baggage that allows that to happen. And I was able to write that stuff, and my mom was here a few months after that amend, and whatever, happened to have like tickets to a show because her friend couldn't come, long story short, and the first person that I called was this woman, and my sponsees were going through a bunch of things, and I was out of town, and this is the number of the woman that I gave them, this woman's number, to get spiritual relief from, right? This woman who, when I walked in the rooms, my whole body would shake, and I like couldn't stand her, and she's the person who's giving me spiritual guidance. What a miracle, right? What a miracle. And she asked me to stand up in her wedding. What? I literally abused her in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she asked me to stand up at her wedding. Oh my God. So a little bit back to WIPA. I've got about 5 minutes. A little bit back to WIPA. I love WIPA. My best friends in the whole world came out of WIPA. I'm just turning off my timer. I'm not. So my best friends in the whole world came out of WIPA. You know, I was telling Connor earlier, he's moving to one of my favorite towns in the U.S. And some of my favorite people are in Louisville. You're going into good hands, and I'm really excited for you. And I got into WIPA service, and I was traveling everywhere doing outreach for a different conference, and I got friends with these people, and then long story short, like, I ran into them at another conference, they introduced me to other people, and I start showing up as a friend in people's lives, right? And I get asked to be in their wedding. And I continue to show up in friends and people's lives. And I went to visit them last year. I was going to TICKEEPA, the Tennessee Conference of Young People, and I stopped in Louisville on the way to see them, and they asked me to be godmother of their 3-month-old child. They have, both of them have siblings. Both of them have best friends from childhood. But because of my spiritual demonstration and how I show up in life and how I show up as a friend, they wanted me to be the godmother of their daughter. What an effing miracle. That has nothing to do with me. That is all about God. And I just want to end with reading one thing from the big book. And, you know, it didn't sound a lot to me when I first came in here, and I know a lot of people, we hear a vision from you a lot, but there's one part in a vision for you that I think that we, or at least I don't hear, that I don't understand when I hear it. You know, I was told that the only requirement for membership was a desire to stop drinking, and I truly believe that the only requirement for the membership to the fellowship of AA is a desire to stop drinking. But I also truly believe that the only requirement for membership to the Fellowship of the Spirit and God is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it tells me that in the big book. It tells me that in page 164, that without the steps, I'm not going to find God. That's not my only requirement to find God. My only requirement to come in the rooms is to have a desire to stop drinking. But in order for me to find God, I got to work the steps. And you know, it says, you know, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Steps 1-3, admit your faults to him and to your fellows. 4-7, clear away the wreckage of your past. Steps 8 and 9, give freely of what you find and join us. Steps 10-12, we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. The only way I get to that fellowship is working steps 1-12, and thank you for letting me be here.